soil is a vital living ecosystem that supports plants, animals, and humans. It's teeming with billions of bacteria, fungi, and other microbes that are the foundation of a complex ecosystem. Viewing soil this way reflects a fundamental shift in the way we care for it. Welcome to the Soil Health Podcast from Monocan Farm.
Well, good afternoon. This is Jay Fear, Soil Health Specialist with the Natural Resources Conservation Service out of Bismarck, North Dakota, and doing a podcast today on behalf of the Monocan Farm. And our guest today is Jimmy Emmons from Leedy, Oklahoma. And he has quite a diverse background. And we know that he has a background in farming, ranching, FPAC regional coordinator, past president of the Oklahoma Association of Conservation Districts, and probably items that I'm not even thinking about. But we want to center in today and kind of find out a little bit about who is Jimmy Emmons. And so we'll ask you that very question, in fact. And also you have kind of a statement that you use that says, long live the soil.
Yes.
And so let's just start with tell us a little bit of who Jimmy Emmons is. Give us a little background on that before we get into anything more specific.
All right, Jay. Well, thanks a lot for the invitation here today and sharing with you a little bit. So Jimmy Emmons, my granddad came to the homestead property that we have in northwest Oklahoma in 1926. I was born there very close to the homestead. We actually moved out to the homestead in 1969 after my granddad retired. Got married in 82, and we have one son, Bo. My wife, Ginger, and I still operate the farm along with one full-time employee, Carson Leibold. So we run cow-calf operation and pretty good size farming operation with multiple crops now. Used to be wheat, alfalfa, and some cotton, but very diverse now, about 14 different crops. So as years progressed, we changed things as we kind of went along. We had a great flood in the 30s that left an impression on my granddad the entire life that he lived. He started a small ditch across our property in 28 or 29, just to divert water across the field to the river out of a kind of a drainage area. And we had they call it the Hammond flood, about 18 inches one night. In a short period of time, and it washed a creek out where he started that.
Sure.
So conservation's been kind of implanted in our ranch and farm since then. So.
Well, it sounds like there was an early conservation ethic that goes along with the history of the farm in the Emmons family. And I think we see that many times, especially when the farm stays within a family. We see not only just the transfer of property, but the transfer of conservation ethic as well.
Yeah, and the knowledge of, you know, take care of the land and it'll take care of you. And that's some of the forethoughts of long live the soil. That's kind of where some of that came from.
Okay. So what I've read and I guess what I've listened to your presentation, the no-till portion of the cropping system probably was somewhere in the mid-90s?
Yeah, that's about 95. Mm-hmm. Late 94, early 95 is when we originally got started.
So what prompted that?
Well, we knew things weren't right, and we were having a lot of wind erosion. Like I said, we used to raise cotton, mm-hmm. And normally that was continuous cotton in certain fields. And so in the spring, we mow boarded a lot back in the early days with granddad and dad, and then we'd fight sand all spring.
So for those of us in the northern plains that don't grow cotton, does it produce much cover after harvest?
No, it's just a plant with a sticks and a few leaves, and once it frosts and freezes and they shed the leaves, it's just and you pull the bowls off, it's just a very narrow stalk.
Yep. Okay. So this got, so the no-till portion of it got started in the 90s, and then from there, maybe share with us a little bit what evolved after the no-till system in the 90s.
Well, you know, that was a period of learning curve, I would say, in there, and a big transition for Emmons Farms. So we lost my granddad in 96, well, late 95, and my dad in 97. And so big transition over to me and my mother. Operate the farm. We're still learning how to no-till and how to embrace that. Mother wasn't bought in 100% because of the history and in the early days, you know, if you plowed more, you made more.
Right.
Now we know that we're mining the carbon out of the soil doing that. She changed and she come along just as I did. And then there was a period that we kind of stalled out down the stretch there, and mm-hmm. I couldn't figure out what was going on. And now I look back, sometimes you think, well, what an idiot, you should have saw that. But then this concept of cover cropping and that soil health term came along, and I tell this quite often, and I'll never give him enough credit, but David Brandt, I heard him speak one time at a National Conservation District meeting, and it just resonated with me, and I thought, you know, if David can do that in Ohio, why can't I do that here?
Right.
And that's when I came home and got started.
That connected with you.
Yeah.
And David's got a great, as a farmer himself, has a great delivery, I think, to his peers and
sure.
and others as well. So, Jimmy, at some point then, was it after listening to David that you started using cover crops, or was it, where does that fall into the timeline?
So that was in the National Association. That would have been in January, early February. And so I came back home and I thought about it a little bit. And you know, how would I do that? Mm-hmm. And no one was doing that around me. And if you mentioned it, everybody said, well, you can't grow one crop hardly. You know, how are you gonna grow continuous? And that's double cropping, and you can't do that. And that was all concerns of
sure.
mine too.
Sure.
So I reached out to our new state conservationist. I knew him as acting for a while, Gary O'Neill.
Yes.
And so Gary, this new term, soil health and cover cropping, what do you think? Would you be interested if we could do something together? And he said, what do you got in mind? And I said, well, what if I offer my farm up as a demonstration and let's try to learn this together? And of course he was all in and has been a wonderful partner since then. And then shortly thereafter, I became a district director in the conservation districts.
On the local soil district?
Yes, local county office.
Very good.
And then I brought them all in and the board, and it's been a wild ride since then.
So you made these changes, and in terms of the cover crops, is there a livestock component also, or how does that play out, Jim?
That really fit our operation perfectly because we were a cow-calf operation and stocker at that time as well. We'd buy calves in the fall and run them till spring, summer, over summer some. And so that naturally fit in. Now, when I first started, we were just trying to cover crop, and I hadn't even thought about grazing, to be quite truthfully.
Mm-hmm.
And my state soil scientist, Steve Ospaugh, said, man, if we could put animals on here, I think we could see a big improvement in biology and the soil. And well, you know, how are we gonna do that? We don't have no fences around there.
Right, right.
And so we kind of started that. I pushed back early, and then my wife really pushed back because I traveled quite a bit. And she said, you know, who's gonna do it if you're not here? So we started on 11, 12 acre paddocks and tried a few cows, mother cows and calves the first year, and found it to be pretty easy. And then we narrowed that down the next year to 5 acres, and then down to daily moves shortly thereafter. And then we've implemented that on a lot of our property. and I don't want to ever give the impression that we do high stock density and heavy rotation everywhere, because we are scattered out quite a bit. But what I do like to do is focus on one farm at a time,
right,
and try to improve it with high stock density, and then move to the next one and
concentrate on them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now we move all our cows from different paddocks, pastures around, and we're still trying to tweak that in the hill country with gyprock hills and cedar trees and valleys and stuff is a challenge.
Challenging landscapes.
Yeah, yep. And water.
Yep.
Water is a big issue.
Always.
But everywhere we do that, we see significant improvement in the range land management. So
something that I want to ask you to describe for us, if you would, this is a huge change that you've made over time. And if you went back to the start and you put the spade in the ground before you started all of this, the no-till, the covers, the livestock grazing, and you looked at your soil, and then you could go to present day and you put the spade in the ground and looked at the soil in the same field, describe to us what you think you've seen. What impacts have you seen, and what have your observations been?
You know, if I would have dug in the beginning, I would have found a very compacted soil, very light textured soil with very limited organic matter in it. We had a lot of sandy soil. It was 0.8% to start with.
Sure.
We've finally got that up to about a percent, shy of percent in places,
yeah,
in 8 years, which is not easy to do.
No. It's a fairly brittle environment that you're in.
Yeah, 20-inch rainfall, and we can be 110. In 2012, we had 150 some days over 100 degrees.
Yeah.
That was an extreme norm.
Yeah. So it's a hot environment.
Yeah, so it's challenging. Today, the shovel goes in very easy. We see water infiltration rates, 6, 8, 10 inches an hour easy. There's spots that we can get more than that, but that's a good representation across the entire farm. When we started irrigating, about a half inch at a time, and that made sense because, yeah, NRCS soil maps would told you that about a half inch infiltration rates was kind of normal for our county.
Mm-hmm.
Now we can easily be irrigating 2 inches, get a 2.5 inch rainfall, and I go down and shut the pivot off, and there's no standing water, no running water. So it became a lot more efficient, use less water because we retain more water.
It's a really good indicator, that you've built soil aggregates and pore spaces that allow this infiltration. No,
yeah,
standing water with 2 inches of irrigation, and that alone is a pretty good indication.
Yeah, and now we see, and Noble Research partnered with me quite a bit in this project as well, and one of their scientists, good friend of mine, Jim Johnson, started noticing that if you had cattle in or animals in the rotation, a good rotation, good covers in between cash crops, that we could see a darkening layer of carbon moving down into profile about an inch a year. And so if you looked at my farm today, you could see about 7 to 8 inches of darkening layer versus the light colored soil.
You've definitely accumulated some carbon over time.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, absolutely.
Not near as fast now as we would like to. Once you kind of start down this, you get in the mode, you don't want to do it tomorrow.
But well, yes.
Tomorrow is, you can't do that quite that quick.
Yeah. So you've come to Bismarck, North Dakota, here in November, and I think you got here on Sunday or Saturday evening,
Saturday night.
And then you participated in the North Dakota Association of Soil Conservation Districts annual meeting, and you were a keynote speaker, and then you were also, the following day, you also gave probably a more in-depth presentation on soil health itself as it pertains to your own operation. And you've also spoke to the North Dakota NRCS employees earlier today. And so you've had a few swings at the ball, and I've also noticed during the convention that you've talked to an endless amount of people.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about your contact with different groups and basically looking at this whole team building aspect, because I think when we locally here, when we think of Jimmy Emmons, we think of a team builder. And maybe just share a little bit of information on team building. And
yeah, I've had this concept a long time, and that's the reason I reached out to Gary O'Neill to start with. If I was going to start down this journey, you know, how do we document, how do we partner with partners? Because the team concept is always better than the single. We see that, and it kind of fits the soil health model,
right.
Diversity.
Right.
I initially put a team together of my fertilizer guy, my implement guy, NRCS, the districts, the commission, Noble Research, to look at Emmons Farms, and my custom harvester at that time too as well, because he was mapping.
Sure.
As we went, to put a plan together. And everybody says, well, why did you need your implement guy there? Well, he had water probes. He also had equipment that I might need. And so if I was going to try something new, if I didn't have it, you know, what was available? And I just found that it's so much easier to do it together, and it's more fun as well, because we kind of all learned together as we went. And, you know, thoughts like Allspa had of grazing I wouldn't have had that early came along. And the no-till drill changes that we made came along because of the higher residue cropping that we were trying to do then. So the whole thing with team is surround yourself with good people and you can do great things. And that really does work. Is a fun thing to come up here for the conservation district meeting. Districts have a key role in how we transform the country across.
Absolutely.
We've made great strides in the last few years in cover crops and soil health and no-till. You can see that in the census data, how that's changed. And that locally led conservation, local producers on the board makes perfect sense.
Correct.
And they have the ability to put demonstrations together with their partners in NRCS and other entities across here. So that was a great opportunity for me to talk a little bit about team building and the opportunity that they have to make their mark down the road. My great-granddad couldn't read and write, but he thought it was very important to make his mark, and he made a unique mark as a check mark with the cross in it, so it was like X, check. And I've related to that a lot, that as we pass through this life, we're only here for a short period of time in the real world time, that, you know, try to leave a mark that people will remember. And wow, what a opportunity we have as human race here to change the way we manage our soil.
Absolutely. And I think what you just described helps us understand your saying of long live the soil. I think that starts to come together now with a bit of a vision as to why that statement's important to you.
Yeah, that's, you know, long live the soil, it better, because
exactly.
We depend on it.
If we're going to farm forever.
Yes, and we have to farm forever if we're
exactly.
going to have food.
Exactly.
So that's where that came from. I trademarked that because I feel very passionate about that.
Yeah.
Lots of civilizations have come and gone because they mismanaged their soil, couldn't feed themselves, you know, and we don't want to be one of those. I hope that the end game is that the story will be told how we almost destroyed it, but turned it around.
But built it back.
Built it back.
Yeah. So this next topic, Jimmy, I want to visit with you just a little bit about too, and bring it into this talk as well, is your recent step into a little different environment. And that being farm production and conservation, commonly known now as FPAC.
Yes.
And you are a regional coordinator for the Southern Plains region for USDA.
Yes.
And so you got to tell us a little bit about this new adventure you're on.
Well, it's quite an adventure. Undersecretary Bill Northey asked me about a year ago if I'd be interested in being a coordinator, and I said, coordinate what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he said, well, we have these three agencies. They're all three great agencies, and all done great things by themselves, not together always.
Yeah. Right.
Now, they all worked in the same buildings a lot of times, worked together on different things a few times, but never as collaborative as one USDA. And he says, we want to try to move that forward if we can for a better customer experience. And so I said, yeah, I'm, you know, be interested. How big an area in the Southern Plains area is Oklahoma, Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Kansas. And
it's a large geographical area.
A large geographical area, but very diverse.
Yes.
Every state's diverse, but then when you put it in a region, it's even more diverse. And it's been a wonderful experience to travel out through the country on the way to a state meeting and stop at a local county office and see how employees are working and how we work together better in the future. And to take really good suggestions from the field back to the Undersecretary and Secretary Perdue to try to change things for the better.
Well, I think a natural fit in this regard is your background. And, you know, take a look at your background and as a team builder. What better fit would there be than...
It didn't appear that way when he asked me the first day. I was rather shocked. But in hindsight, I could see where you could put that together. Like I said, I didn't think about that. But it's all about how we work together. To move conservation and move farm programs and emergency programs through all the disasters that we've been having. You know, how does that team help the Red River Valley in a flooding situation,
right.
or the western part in a major fire? You know, just how do we do that better? How do we comfort them producers in stress times to assist them with a loan or a program that could change or make or break the operation? You know, how do we do that?
Well, and especially right now, I think, you know, there's so much restructuring that's been occurring within USDA, and specifically for these three agencies, NRCS, FSA, and RMA. And so I think what is always very helpful in these times is the voice of reason.
Yeah, and one of the conversations I had with the undersecretary right up front was, I'm not qualified. And he said, well, the qualifications I'm looking for is common sense, practicality, and the will and desire to do what needs to be done. And that intrigued me, and because, you know, you hear a lot of times that government has lost common sense, and what a breath of fresh air that we have a secretary and an undersecretary that wants to put that back in. Practicality, that fits
absolutely.
Agriculture.
Yeah. No, I think you've really touched on a number of topics today that are informative and give us an understanding, you know, everything from conservation ethic on your farm to the journey on your farm with making changes and transitioning and the no-till systems and the cover crops. And I think we come to understand it didn't all happen in one day.
No.
You know, it happened over time. And but yet you adjusted and you were resilient, and now we understand your soils are resilient with you.
Yeah.
So this is a pretty exciting story. So.
You know, I was out in California a couple of times in the last few years, and I went up into the Redwood area, and if you ever had the chance to see that, you need to. And it really helped me put things in perspective when you saw a tree that you could drive your car through, how they cut that down with an axe in the early days. And it was days project, weeks project to cut one tree down. And that's kind of what we're up against in turning these soils around. It's one whack at a time. And it's a slow process, but if you whack away every day, in the end, you'll get there.
And it's always the start. You know,
yes.
How do you, something happened that motivated you, made a change, and you actually had the start then.
Yeah, and my granddad McCree on my mother's side always talked about leaning into the row, chopping cotton. And I use that a lot is, you know, if you're moving forward and you have a mistake, you have a hiccup, if you fall forward. If you go into it overwhelmed and you're backing up and you fall backwards. And soil health, just lean into it, move forward.
Very good, very good. Well, we thank you for coming to North Dakota. Thank you for participating in the North Dakota Association of Soil Conservation Districts annual meeting, and also for the podcast today, and just sharing your history and really your journey in terms of what's happened to Jimmy Emmons and what's happened to the farm, and why are you this team builder that we observe all the time? And I think it gives us a little glimpse into all that. And for that, we really appreciate it.
Well, thanks a lot for the invitation. And what perfect weather you have for me here while I was here. I really enjoyed it, Jay. Thanks a lot.
Very good. Thank you so much.
The Soil Health Podcast is a production of the Minokin Farm. Minokin Farm exists to foster natural resource education and systems approach conservation. This 150-acre demonstration farm, located just east of Bismarck, North Dakota, was established in 2009 and draws people from all over the world. The farm is owned and operated by Burley County Soil Conservation District, which has an office in Bismarck, North Dakota. Additional financial and technical support is provided by the North Dakota Department of Health Water Quality Division, Natural Resources Conservation Service, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture.